Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
All right. Well, I started off the podcast wondering why the heck I couldn't move too far away from my computer, and that's because I still had my headphones plugged in. Now that I've corrected that problem, let's start the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and of course, I did say Friday.
Start spreading the news.
There you go. That means Schomburg Stu is here. Stu, how you doing?
All right. Well, if Frank is spreading the news, I hope it's good at least.
Yeah, that would be nice. All right. If you want to call in and talk to Stu and I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something starting over there. That would be probably tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link. Get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd really appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still don't have Stu on Twitter, and of course, with the way people are rambling through everybody's Twitter accounts, it's probably a good idea he's not out there right now. But you can help hunt me down at Burke time if you would like to, and I will pass any messages you'd like to send Stu along if you're interested in doing that. So there you go. All right, I think that's it. I don't think we have anything else to talk about, right? We're okay. We can go now. Oh, so.
All right. With all that's going on in wrestling, regarding Twitter, by the way, and Facebook and everything else, maybe it's a good thing I'm not on there.
Yeah, so otherwise you would definitely have people roaming through your Twitter account to see what you have posted, because they're apparently that's a job. I didn't kind of realize that, but there are, you know, I mean, there are people who just go back years through years and years worth of tweets to see what you've posted, and that I just, you know, I mean, I I've had some pretty boring jobs in my life, but that would have to be one of the, you know, the most ridiculous ones I think that are out there. But
yeah,
anyway,
people go back. Yeah, I've got to say one more thing, that people go back 20 years. Hey, he said this 22 years ago. How about that? What are we going to do about that? Let's get rid of this guy. And on it goes.
Well, that's the thing they're doing in Minnesota. I saw they're taking down the statue of Cal Griffith, who, you know, owned the team for like forever, because apparently he made some racist remarks in 1978.
Oh. Well, only 42 years ago, right?
42. When everything was completely different in the world, 42 years ago, he made some racial comments in a speech he gave, and anything good he ever did no longer matters, and that statue came down today. So I don't know. It's just nuts. I know they removed a statue from the Redskins facility as well, but I don't know, you know, who or what it was. I didn't look at it right away. So, you know, maybe later I can get a chance to see what's going on there. But yeah, it's just crazy. I'm under the impression that we'll probably just take every statue down, you know, that we have in America right now. That seems to be the best way to go.
Not only statues, but a long-standing product is going bye-bye too, after being around for so many years, and one of the great movies of all time is no longer being shown on HBO Max streaming.
So yeah, I'm you know, I was really confused by that when they did it, because I know the actress that, you know, portrayed the character that everybody's all up in arms in, didn't she win a bunch of awards for that?
I believe she won the Academy Awards for in a supporting role. That's right.
So yeah, and that's one of those things where they keep telling you that if you're silent, you're part of the problem. But you know, when it comes to something like that, I have no idea what the hell's going on. I don't know why they can't show the movie. I did get a kick out of it. There was a meme going around saying that they were going to show Blazing Saddles and remove all the racial slurs from the movie, which is a fantastic Mel Brooks comedy if you haven't ever never seen it. And they were like, yeah, it's going to run from 8 o'clock to 8:07 on whatever channel.
Right.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, he's made some funny ones over the years, and that's one of his classics for sure.
So yeah, that's one of my all-time favorite movies, and it's like great. I'll probably never get to see it again now. So
hey, you can always watch Young Frankenstein, another classic.
Yeah.
Well, for now I can until they come
there
up
too,
with
right?
Them.
They'll find something too.
Yeah, you
know, get that removed.
I mean, unfortunately, if you look hard enough, you're going to find something to remove just about everything, you know, and I mean, at this point, how do you say no? I mean, with all we're doing with this.
Well, you know, there's a classic Disney movie that they will never release, although, of course, there's a lot of bootleg copies of it available, but Disney company themselves will never put this movie out, and that was the Song of the South.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a little bit. You can still hear the song, the Zippity-Doo-Dah song, but they'll never release the movie.
No. And yeah, it's strange that even from you think of these things would still be available from a historical point of view. Look what they showed. Look how they portrayed these people when this movie was released. Well, we know better now, and maybe we do. But does that mean that movie should no longer be seen?
Yeah, again, this is where I kind of get lost because, you know, you're supposed to learn from history. That's what I was always told. But now it almost seems more like we're trying to erase it, instead of teach. Because, I mean, we're talking, I mean, that, you know, how old are these movies we're talking about? You know, I mean, they're...
65 years old, probably, right?
Hold on, I don't even know. So, you know, obviously things have changed since then, you know, and when 2080 comes around, and I'm guessing you and I will no longer be here, you may still be hanging on, but I'll probably be long gone.
Speak for yourself.
So, yeah, you know, it's probably going to be different then. So I don't know why we instead of learning from it, why we get rid of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not forced to watch it if it's on, right? I mean, nobody's going to hold you down and say, hey, you got to watch this.
No, no one's forcing you to watch it. So if you don't like the content or the way certain characters are portrayed, like you said, don't watch the movie.
You know, that's like, you know, and again, I always thought that was kind of a choice, but and that's why I'm just kind of, I get so baffled by all this because, you know, I mean, I believe, you know, they're making some very valid points. I mean, obviously there are some things that, you know, that need to be changed, especially, you know, when it comes to the way the police are. You know, I have no issues with that. I totally support what they're trying to do. I do believe that, you know, police target certain groups. I have zero doubt whatsoever that that's not true. But, yeah, I don't know what getting rid of a movie or getting rid of a statue or any of that kind of has to do with that at this point in time.
You would wonder why these things are happening. And, you know, I could see the antagonism and the divisiveness, but is it ever going to be any better? I'm very discouraged regarding what's going on. I don't see any – there has been some things that have improved over the years. Obviously, there's no longer segregation in the South and everything else, but have we as a nation really come together the way we should? And probably not. Not yet, at least.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, you know, my biggest fear now is anytime something doesn't go, you know, the way of a black person, it's going to start a riot. you know, because that just kind of seems to be the answer right now. Is you go out and you burn something down, and it's like, well, that doesn't seem like the right way to go about this, but apparently that's the answer.
And you would think that that happened, of course, during some other incidents that took place over the years, the Rodney King incident, and you would think that now there would be some more people taking cognizance of the fact that what good does that do to destroy and loot stores in our neighborhood that we need? That we need these stores,
yeah.
We need the products, and now they're burned to the ground, and no one wants to rebuild. Now, how does that help you?
Yeah, that's going to be the really sad part is, you know, when these stores don't come back, then it's going to be complaining that we don't have access to this. Well, why don't you have access to it? You know, nobody's going to accept the blame for it because, you know, it's going to hurt the people who shop there more than probably the people who burned it down.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a lose-lose situation, really, and very discouraging times that we live in. I mean, not only are we going through these incidents, but, of course, we're still concerned about the COVID-19 and everything else. And you wonder can you imagine the astronomical amount of money that has been lost by all these different companies and people's incomes over the last few months? I mean, will we ever bounce back completely? I'm really not sure.
Well, I got to tell you, my company isn't losing a dime. They're making money hand over fist right now. So.
Well, some companies certainly are really reaping the benefits because of the industry they're in, like yours. And others, though, aren't quite as fortunate. And we're talking about billions and billions of dollars lost over the last few months.
Yeah, it's an incredibly sad situation, and I'm really kind of wondering if it will ever be corrected.
Yeah, and we're talking. We're talking about COVID-19 briefly, and I understand there's been quite a spike in the Florida area, and how is that going to affect the NBA?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that, and I know that Major League Baseball, the Blue Jays and the Phillies had their first positive tests, so they've closed their facilities, and I know there was a professional golfer he tested positive after the first round of their tournament yesterday. Unfortunately, you know, these are things that are just going to happen. I mean, you know, there are so many golfers, you know, I'm trying to remember how many actually go to a tournament, but, you know, I think it's 50 or maybe it might even be 75. So it's a large group of people, you know, then you add in the tournament providers, you know, same thing with a baseball facility. I mean, there's a lot of people in and around there that are working to try to make sure it's ready because we were falsely under the impression we were going to have a baseball season. So, you know, you're going to get these, you know, it's just natural progression. But unfortunately, you know, when something like this happens, the media jumps all over it like every single person in the organization has the disease or the virus. Because I just saw the stuff reported about the Blue Jays and the Phillies earlier, and they didn't even give you a number. They just made it seem like everybody had it. And there aren't even any players. I don't believe there aren't any players in the facilities right now. So, it was just kind of like, okay. And again, you know, and this is the problem I've had lately with the media is, boy, they really just seem to leave stuff out. And it's important stuff, you know, that you need to know here. Like for the Phillies, it's 5 players and 3 staff members. So, and then the Blue Jays don't even have an official case. They just had a player that exhibited symptoms and they shut the facility down.
Yeah, they do have a tendency to show only what they want to show. And, you know, there's a famous saying in the New York Times. They've had it for years. It's all the news that's fit to print. You've heard of that one? Well, they could change it around. They could change that around and say that all the news that fits, we print. Good play on words there, right?
Yeah. You know, and I mean, I understand it. You don't want the facts to get in the way of having a really good story. So, why tell anybody that it was eight people in the Phillies organization and the Blue Jays had no actually official test? Maybe, you know, maybe this player will eventually test positive, but as of right now, they don't have an official, you know, COVID-19 case. They're just being safe and shutting everything down. But, you know, it's easier to panic everybody and say, oh, my God, look at this. And, you know, that's all they did.
Well, here's a doomsday scenario for you, and we could pick any sport, but let's take, for example, and we may have touched on this briefly last week. Let's take baseball. Let's say, for the sake of argument, and I know it's not a given yet, there's finally a season. Okay, 64 games. Now, what happens when the teams have played 12 games, 15 games, and one team comes down with seven or eight players who catch the virus? What happens to the rest of the teams? What happens to the season? How do they address that issue?
Yeah, well, that's what we've been trying to figure out. Like, the NBA mentioned that, you know, they actually went through and explained what they would do if they had somebody with a positive test on how they would be removed and quarantined for 14 days. But what they didn't explain was, does the team just have to go on without them? Do they put something on hold? You know, how does this kind of work? Because, I mean, you think about it, what if it's LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard or Giannis Antetokounmpo or Anthony Davis or it's one of the big stars? Is it really fair for their team to try to win a title because he got sick? Now, if he got hurt, that's one thing. You know, that's part of the game.
Yes.
Catching the coronavirus isn't part of the game.
Yeah, there are certainly some unpleasant scenarios to consider when these things could happen.
So, yeah, and, you know, like, I haven't seen – well, you know, like, with baseball, I'm back to the point where I know we're not going to have to worry about it because it's become abundantly clear to me that the players and their union do not want a season. You know, because they had the meeting, you know, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred sat down with the president of the Major League Baseball Players Association, Tony Clark. They met for a few hours, and it really looked like they had a deal. It looked like we were going to get a schedule between 60 and 65 games. The players got what they wanted. They weren't being asked to give back any money. Not only did they make the DH viable for what would be the 2020 season, but they also put it in for the 2021 season. So that would mean the DH would be here permanently because it's going in the next CBA anyways. And, you know, there were some other stuff that, you know, went through. But the main one was, you know, the players didn't want to give back that money, and they weren't asked to. And, I was like, oh, okay, we're going to get a deal. It looked like they were going to start around July 31st. And then all of a sudden, they want to be done. They don't want to play into, October, I think it is. They want to be done by September 30th. And then, you know, the players come back with a 70-game proposal just out of the blue. After it kind of looked like there was an agreement. So, and, you know, and I don't know, you know, like they didn't mention what the problem was with the one that was going to be like 60 or 65 games or, you know, how it was going to work out. But, yeah, it was like, okay, and now the owners have rejected this 70-game proposal.
Right.
So we're pretty much right back to where we started from, even though it really looked at, you know, that it looked like Rob Manfred and Tony Clark had worked this out, and we were going to see what little baseball there was going to be. I mean, be it 60 games or be it 70 games, the season is going to be a joke as it was. So I don't understand why they, you know, the only thing that makes sense to me for sending another proposal is they don't want to play. And with the way they've negotiated, it's become very clear that they have no intention of wanting to play this season, and they want to file that million-dollar grievance against the owners, and then we're going to have to deal with the BS all off season about, well, is this guy really a free agent? Does he have a year left on his does he have a year left of arbitration now? Does he have 2 years of arbitration? And then we're going to listen to the players cry about the owners not giving any contract offers, because they are going to lose billions of dollars. Bottom line.
Yep.
So
I'm wondering what kind of solidarity there is among all the players in MLB. Are they all in agreement? Are there some players who are dissenting and saying, come on, let's play. Let's get a deal together. I want to play ball. Or are they trying to say that we're all listening together, and if we don't get what we want, we're not going to play baseball, period?
The only thing I've seen come out is there were some guys who posted like these when and where tweets, but that was when they were trying to get Rob Manfred to force the season so they would be guaranteed that pay, because that was another fun thing the media left out when they were explaining how Rob Manfred could force the season and how these players were almost daring him to do it. And A, it made me feel like a little kid, because it seemed like stuff we used to do as a kid, going, I dare you. And then I was waiting for somebody to double dare him. And then I figured somebody else
right.
would double dare him. But what they forgot to put in when they were talking about this story was, if Manfred was to do that, the players automatically get their full prorated pay. That's worked into that deal if he forces a season. So it was just kind of like, okay, well, again, I understand it's a great story because players are taunting the commissioner, but you left out the reason why, because that was when the owners were still proposing for them to give back some money. And it was just like all they were trying to do was get paid. Bottom line, that's all it was. So it was just, come on. Pay attention. Fans aren't stupid. Don't treat them like they're stupid.
Yeah,
and, give us the whole story. Let us make up our mind.
Fans certainly don't want to be patronized. And they're running out of time. I mean, there's another, week and a half left in June? And no deal yet?
Yeah.
I mean, is it completely dead, you think, at this point in time? Or is there still an outside chance we'll see some baseball?
I guess there's always some kind of outside chance, and now that the owners have kind of given in to this not taking money away from the players, we may see Rob Manfred step in and use that power to force a 50-game season, because that's the power he was given in the first negotiation. So, and I don't know what other things come along with it, except the players get that guarantee. The only problem with that may be is the fact that if he does that, there may be players who decide to sit out. Now, I don't know what the recourse is there. I don't know, how they would be paid or if they would be paid. Like the NBA has mentioned, they don't have any issues with their guys staying home. If you don't want to play, if you don't feel safe coming to Orlando to do the bubble thing they're talking about, you can stay home, but they have it set up on how they're going to deduct your salary.
So that's
all laid out in the NBA's plan, where baseball didn't do that because I don't think they ever thought we would get to this point.
Right. And you're talking about the NBA. If I were an NBA player, I'd be awfully worried about playing in that bubble myself, especially what's going on in Florida with the spike they've had. So I could see them saying, this is not safe, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, well, as long as you're clean and you're in the bubble, there shouldn't be any real issue. What you have to worry about is if you get a player who decides that he needs to go out on the town or whatever, because they're going to cater everything they can to them. It's going to be a campus-like atmosphere. So, they're not going to have to go out for food. They're not going to have to, somebody will probably do their laundry. Whatever they need is going to be given to them right there, be it at the hotel they're staying at or whatever other facility they use. there's probably no reason to leave. The question is, you know, and the NBA has always been the league that kind of comes off as the party type league. Can these guys stay at home and just concentrate on basketball? Or are we going to get the guys that want to go out and see what's going on? And, you know, the NBA has made it clear if you go out, when you come back in, you've got to serve a 10-day quarantine. I don't know, you know, and that, you know, and that's going to be one of the sticking points of, you know, how this works out and, you know, what they decide to do. And we'll, you know, we'll have to see, because I know they're getting very close to having to report. So, you know, there's some things they got to kind of figure out and, you know, make sure it's all in place. It'll see if anybody decides that they don't want to go.
And of course, if some of the top players don't go, that's going to really put a damper on the season itself if it ever does start. And it's not a legitimate victory. Some of these players aren't going to participate. So that's a mess, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the important thing for the NBA right now is, you know, it doesn't, with the exception of Kyrie Irving, who, depending on who you are, maybe you look at him as a star player, maybe you don't. He's kind of borderline there, even though, you know, I believe he did win a finals and an All-Star Game MVP. So, you know, it just kind of depends where you are, you know, because like he's talked about boycotting, but the players who are involved with him are Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard. Like Dwight Howard used to be a big name, not anymore.
No, his best days are long behind him.
So yeah, that'll be the that'll be the interesting thing there. If he could have gotten a big time backer, you know, to go with him when he was making his statements about how they shouldn't play and, you know, all that other stuff, maybe this would have a little bit of steam, but unfortunately he didn't get any of that. It was just kind of him against the world.
Yeah, exactly right. And do you think that, which let's assume that there will be some kind of sports, you think that the first sport that starts ahead of the others will have a huge advantage in the ratings once they all get involved?
Oh yeah. So yeah, whichever one comes back first, you know, I mean, as you can tell just by now, I mean, the NASCAR ratings have been way above what they used to be, and it's NASCAR. So, you know, I mean, imagine, you know, if you get back one of the sports that has a bigger fan base, well, you know, what are you going to get there? You're going to get even more people, you know, to come through and be like, oh yeah, hey, this is on, let's watch this.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that first, you know, that just be it the NHL or the NBA or maybe baseball gets its head out of its rear end and they get going, it's going to be a big rating pop for whoever it happens to be.
And some of the major horse racing is going to be starting pretty soon also. And I imagine that the Belmont might even be first. And I'm sure they'll have a huge spike in their ratings as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, yeah, especially, you know, you can promote the Triple Crown with that. And, yeah, you know, and I mean, one of the things that actually kind of surprised me was I really thought that the wrestling ratings might jump up a little bit because, again, while it's what's the best way to describe it, the outcomes are predetermined. It's still an athletic event. I mean, you're looking at guys who are fantastic athletes. But, you know, it's almost been the opposite with it. It seems that people have almost kind of turned away. The ratings are actually dropping. I know they bounced back this week, but as a whole, they've been going down. And I don't know if maybe more people are going outside now that some of the orders were lifted or what. But I was a little surprised that they didn't get a bigger rating, a bigger ratings growth from this.
Yeah, I know that the rating wars on Wednesday, AEW versus NXT, have been kind of flat for both organizations and kind of been running. I don't see any big spikes there. I think they've been kind of flat before and after the virus started. So they don't seem to be making any big inroads in ratings at all.
No, and you know the ratings for Monday Night Raw are down. So, and I know like right now Fox is incredibly unhappy with WWE for the angle from last week that you and I discussed a little bit here, because they said it went against their standards and practices, because apparently you're not allowed to throw urine on somebody, even though it is fake. It was just apple juice, but you know, apparently you're not allowed to do that. Apparently you're not allowed to do that on television. I didn't know that.
And
so,
did you know, by the way,
yeah,
that they edited that out when they showed it on the West Coast? Yeah. They didn't even show that portion.
So
that was very tasteless. Yeah, that was a very tasteless angle. Anyway, I mean, that was repulsive.
They did this years ago with Shawn Michaels, and he threw it at Vince McMahon. It's not new. I don't understand what they thought they were going to get out of it, but this is really them going back to their old style of almost shock type booking when they want to make it, we're going to surprise everybody with this, and they're not going to believe that we did this like they did in, what do they call it? Is it the Ruthless Aggression era? Is that what they described that one as?
No,
so
more,
it,
more hard, hardcore style. In the days of Steve Austin and all that good stuff, I suppose.
Yeah.
It was kind of a hard-boiled style of that, I don't know. Like I always tell you, a good angle is worth repeating.
Yeah, but this wasn't even a good angle, and they still repeated it.
No.
That'll tell you how desperate they are to,
even,
you know.
Like it's a bad angle. It's a bad angle in their eyes is worth repeating, too.
You know, and the sad part is, you know, they promoted that so much. Oh, you're not going to believe what happens, and oh, this and that. And it's still, you know, I think overall they did win the night, but the rating wasn't any better than it normally was. So I don't get it. You know, you think they could evolve, and they almost don't seem like they are. You know, they made changes in the booking team, and it's going to be a guy who is really out of touch with the business, and we're going to get all these probably older style angles that we saw many years ago, and I just don't think anybody's going to care.
And I was quite surprised they did that, because they always say that we're a family style entertainment, and boy, that certainly was far from being that.
That's only when Linda's running for office are they a family style entertainment business.
Of course she lost, didn't she?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, you know, that's just kind of how that goes. But yeah, because then obviously, you know, they're taken under a microscope much more seriously if she's running for something. And you know, sadly, I don't think she could ever win anything with, you know, this being her husband's business. I could never see that, getting past.
No, and remember about this angle we're talking about, what just took place, that urine-throwing thing. It was a taped incident, taped anyway, and it was already widely reported what was going to happen on the Internet. I'm wondering if more people tune in to see it, actually see it, or just didn't bother watching it because they knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure a lot of people out there were just kind of like, I've already seen this. You know, I saw this how many years ago with Shawn Michaels and McMahon. Or, you know, I mean, if you look at the angle, you know, you were disgusted by it. I'm sure there were a lot of people who looked at it and said, why in the hell do I want to watch this? You know?
Exactly. Exactly right. And well, I guess they're burying Jeff Hardy anyway. I think his contract comes up in September. And
yeah, pretty soon.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him jump over to AEW.
Yeah, and he did lose the match after that. You know, they had I think the pay-per-view was last week or whatever they call them now. I think it was a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
He did end up
losing. Lost.
So, you know, that was kind of all for naught. You know, it's like, oh, okay, great. We went through all this with him and he got beat. So I don't even know if they'll revisit that or if that feud continues or if, you know, they move Hardy on to maybe try to get somebody else over, you know, as he's getting ready to go out the door.
And when they start jobbing a wrestler out, a fairly upper card wrestler out like that, you know, his days with the organization are limited.
And I always do wonder, you know, because Vince McMahon always saw Jeff Hardy as a superstar, but not Matt. So, like, you know, when Matt came up with this fantastic, you know, that he got over in TNA because they gave him the time to go out there and do the gimmick, which was just something, you know, when they went back to WWE, I knew it was never going to work because I knew Vince would never dedicate the time it would need to get it over. And now AEW's given him a little bit of that time, and he's back over now. Everybody's kind of interested in him. But, for whatever reason, you know, Vince never saw him as a top guy, but Jeff, he thought was.
Yeah, I guess Jeff probably has a slightly better reputation than Matt. And of course, they both had their issues behind the scenes over the years, too. And I really hope that they're all done with that now, but it doesn't look like they're ever going to be 100%. They're always going to have to watch out for their demons.
Yeah, well, you know, Jeff's problems were legal. You know, that was Jeff. You know, I mean, he was in legitimate legal hot water. You know, Matt's thing was just, it was more personal with the, you know, the girlfriend breakup, and then she cheated on him with somebody he thought was his friend who was in the company. You know, I mean, Matt, you know, Matt's never had the drug or the alcohol issues like Jeff has had that's gotten him in so much trouble. So, you know, Matt's are, you know, much more avoidable, so to speak, especially now that he's married with kids. I don't think we'll see that pop back up. But, you know, Jeff has the kind of problem that always kind of, you know, can always come back at any minute, and you just never know when it's going to show up. So you hope he's, you know, he's clean and he's clear and everything's good, but you just never know.
Yeah, and that's why it disturbed me so much when they turn something like that into an actual wrestling angle.
Yeah. And while we're on wrestling, if you wouldn't mind, I would like to I would like to toot my own horn. I don't know how many people are out there watching like AEW Dark, or I believe he wrestled once on AEW Dynamite. But if you do happen to catch him, and I believe this week he's actually wrestling Brian Cage, when you see a wrestler by the name of Robert Anthony, he was trained by me. He used to wrestle with me in a fed we had called PCW. He started his career as Egotistico Fantastico. Used to wear and do the luchador gimmick. Now he is Robert Anthony. He's been working for AEW for probably the past month or so, doing some matches on Dark. He did a tag match with Sean Spears on Dynamite where he looked better than Spears did, which was really strange because Spears is the guy signed to the contract. He had a really nice match with John Moxley, who he's actually really close friends with. That's how he got in. And then I believe this coming up Dark, which is on Tuesday, I think they release it, he wrestles Brian Cage. And Dark is the program they put online. So, believe it or not, he's actually someone that I trained to be a professional wrestler. Obviously, he got some other grooming from a very good professional wrestler by the name of Harley Race when he spent some time there. But I was the guy who got him before he knew how to do anything else in the ring. So, you know,
well,
if you check that out.
I don't know if the fans know about this or people listening, but you've always had the reputation of being a great trainer, but not the easiest guy to to work with because you were so stringent. But if those guys paid attention to you, they'd learn how to be a professional in the ring.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, another guy, now, I didn't have anything to do with his training. I think, if I remember correctly, I taught him how to lock up a couple times. Seth Rollins actually came through another Fed, which I started, called AAW. Danny Daniels handled the majority of his training, though. I just, you know, I got him when he was, you know, I think he was 17 or something when he started wrestling on those shows. And he had been wrestling for a few years with his buddies in a barn in Iowa. But, yeah, he came through this system that I was associated with as well. So, you know, couple guys out there that I think I helped or might have helped. I know I helped Robert Anthony. Seth Rollins, I don't think he would remember my name if he saw me. But, you know, Rob I actually still talk to.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And I hope these guys are, at least some of the guys you trained who are starting to do well in the business are appreciative of your training methods, at least.
So, yeah, you know, you wonder, you know, I know it's to the point now where it's been so long, a lot of them have just kind of moved on and gotten on with their lives. Cause you know, you do wonder if AAW would have started 10 years ago, would more of my guys have gotten this opportunity? But, you know, that was, you know, 10 years is a long time. And, you know, you get married, you have kids, you got to take care of your family. And, you know, when you're out wrestling for $20 in front of 25 people in some armory in, you know, the hills of Tennessee, the wife normally isn't too happy about that.
No.
So, you know, that dream ends very quickly. I mean, it's a business for young single guys or just single guys if you can kind of, you know, hang on long enough.
It'll be interesting, by the way, to see if your protege, Robert Anthony, will get any offense in, or is it going to be a squash match?
Yeah, I'm kind of under the impression, you know, like since him and Moxley were friends, Moxley gave him some offense. And I know in his tag match, which I actually saw on Dynamite, he got some offense in. With the way they're booking and pushing Brian Cage, I'm kind of under the impression that he's just going to have to go out there and bump his ass off for him and make him look really good, which won't be a problem because Rob is he's very talented. So that won't be an issue at all.
Yeah, he looks kind of muscle-bound to me, this Brian Cage. I wasn't too familiar with him,
yeah.
But he looks slow, a little slow in the ring, but he has a heck of a physique.
Yeah, you know, what's weird is, you know, obviously he's not fast being that he's, I think he's 6'5 or 6'6 and probably close to 300 pounds, but he's incredibly athletic. You know, I mean, like, he can do a lot of the things that the smaller guys do. So it's, you know, it's impressive with, you know, what these athletes have kind of turned into now. Because, I mean, before, you know, you wouldn't really see the 300-pound guys use the ropes. And, I mean, I remember what a revelation it was when back in the AWA, Jerry Blackwell threw a drop kick. And everybody went crazy because, you know, here's 400-pound Jerry Blackwell throwing a dropkick on a guy.
That was a nice
you know, and
too,
now
if I remember, yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, whatever, that was just a dropkick. Now these guys are doing moonsaults and, you know, diving out of the ring and, you know, all the other stuff that's associated with some of the moves now. And it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's so risky now. And you know what I think of the current crap of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
It's, as Lou Fez said, I believe, it's choreographed tumbling. And he has a good point. But I'm not saying that these guys aren't talented. They're super talented athletes. You have to be talented to do what they do. But, boy, they just better hope that their opponent protects them when they do these dives off the top rope and into the barrier and make sure they catch him properly. I hope it happens more often than not.
Yeah, you know, and that's always the tough part. I mean, we see guys, you know, get injured quite a lot now just because, you know, this guy was a little out of place or the dive was a little off, you know, something to that aspect. You know, you've got to be, you know, really careful and really on target and – unfortunately, I've seen it go bad too many times.
Yeah, I'll tell you what bothers me now are the tag team wrestlings. I'll tell you why, because when I first started watching tag team wrestling, they had a little rope there, a little piece of rope by the where you stood, and you'd have to hold onto that rope, and then your partner would tag you in. And now, when there's your partner's in danger of being pinned, they ignore that completely and just jump into the ring and kick the guy off at a two count. I saw that happen the other night more often than not, and I guess the rules are even more relaxed than they've ever been before.
Well, they do still – have you noticed they do use the tag rope in AEW? The guy – it is in the corner, and the guys do hang on to it when they make tags. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. And I have seen them, which is something, I hadn't seen in years, actually enforce who the legal man was in the ring when it comes to pinfalls. You know, and that's the first time, and I can't even think about how many years it's been where they're like, well, he's not the legal man, you can't pin him, or you're not the legal man, I can't count the pin. So, that's kind of nice to see. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to go back to the days where, you know, guys know how to sell and actually continue to sell throughout the match. I mean, I think that's long gone, you know, or guys trying to find a body part and work on it to go for a submission. You know, those things happen so fast now and out of the blue, it's not even funny.
When you train wrestlers, and that's a good point you brought up, did you teach them how to sell?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, not only do you teach them how to sell, you teach them to remember what they're supposed to be selling. You know, because as it goes on throughout the match, you've got to, you know, I mean, if you take a gigantic move to some part of your body, how do you recover 5 minutes later? You know, you should still be limping, or your arm should still be hurting, you know, or your back should be sore, or whatever it came out to be. But, you know, now, again, you know, that's something that goes away. And what I always kind of get a kick out of is, you know, a guy will take a gigantic move, or, you know, he'll be trapped in like the figure four and he'll get out of it. And he makes his comeback and he doesn't sell. And all of a sudden, 10 minutes later in the match, he's limping.
Right.
And they're like, he was in the figure four for so long. And it's like, yeah, where was he 10 minutes ago? Did he just remember? He was in the figure four.
There's a lot of stuff now when a submission holds, say a fit, like you mentioned, a figure four is put on an opponent. Years ago, Buddy Rogers put on the figure four, Ric Flair even. That match is over. Now the opponent will drag himself over to the ropes and finally make the save, getting over to the ropes, forcing a break, never giving up. Of course, you do see some exceptions. There are some exceptions, I have to admit. But the exceptions rather than the norm nowadays when it comes to a submission hold.
So, yeah, it's a little odd to kind of see, you know, because you wonder, you know, a guy gets a submission hold on and you're like, well, is it really over? Is this guy going to get to the ropes? Or, you know, who's coming out to interfere, you know, where the ref's going to be distracted. And,
right,
you know,
right.
Something.
That gets old after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And does every match now have near falls 35 times during a match? The two counts?
Yeah.
He's up in two and three quarters, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's always, you know, always the near fall, or, you know, the one where it's like, oh, did he hit three? No, he didn't hit three. It's just, you know, I get it. You have to, you know, the announcers have to sell it. I mean, they're just doing their jobs. But, yeah, it's, you know, it's just the nature of the beast now. Or even, like, you know, watching some of the stuff the guys got out of. And, you know, this all started with, you know, back in ECW when Hardcore was in. You know, you'd watch a guy get hit in the head with a frying pan or, you know, a chair or something, and he would kick out at two, and then he gets beat with a roll-up.
Yeah,
that's right.
Now, when you were in your heyday as a trainer, there wasn't as much acrobatics as there are now, right? There wasn't all that much of suicide. There was no training in terms of suicide dives over the top rope where an opponent would protect you. Did you have any of that then, or is that something relatively new?
No, it was there, but it was more or less, and I actually just kind of think almost exclusively, it was done by what everybody considered the cruiserweights. You know, that was what the smaller guys did, and the way it used to be booked is you would send these guys out there early in the show, and they would get the crowd all hyped up watching, you know, these guys fly around and do all their, you know, just their insane moves that they do, you know, and then the heavyweight guys would come out and give them a wrestling match. And, you know, that's kind of how the cards were structured. But, like, if you, you know, like, if you listen now, like, you know, like when the guys come out, they give actual weight now. I think if I heard correctly, there was a tag team on, I think it was NXT this week, that was only like 375 pounds. Now, I've wrestled guys who are bigger than that by themselves.
Yeah.
I know the guy Cody Rhodes wrestled this week. I think he was announced as 175 pounds. And, you know, now before, those guys would have exclusively been cruiserweights, and they would have only, you know, if they wrestled a heavyweight, they would have been beaten relatively handily. You know, they would have been given a little offense so they didn't look like complete, you know, chumps, but, you know, the heavyweight would have beat them with a big power move and put them away. Now it's, you know, it's a whole different story and a whole different world. I mean, you know, how many times do you see this little guy beat the, you know, the 7-footer?
And another interesting story, maybe you might know something about this one. We'll talk about Bruiser Brody, the late Bruiser Brody, but I guess he was very upset with a couple of preliminary wrestlers one time. Maybe they were in the second or third match in the card because the match was too good. He didn't like that. He didn't like the fact that the match was so good and is so exciting because now what is he going to do when he gets to the main event? And he kind of told the guys off because of this. Have you heard stories similar to that over the years?
Yeah, that's actually a very old school attitude. That goes way back in the business to where, you know, and you know that you didn't want guys going out there early in the card using everything up, was the term they would say. Well, you've used everything up. You've used the crowd up. You've used the moves up. You know, what are we going to do? You know, so yeah, that goes way back. I've heard that many, you know, many times, and that was one of the issues that we had to, as the business began to change, we had to show Sonny Rogers how to, you know, how that worked, because that's how he was. Oh, you know, these guys are going out there, they're using all these moves, we're not going to have anything left. And basically what the guys were is they're warming up the crowd for you. It's like the comedian who goes out before the talk show starts. He warms up the crowd, and that's what these guys were doing. You know, they're going out there, they're hitting some big high-flying spots. And, you know, the way you limit it is you cut their time. So, you know, they're only out there 8 minutes, and they can't do everything. So, you know, that's how you kind of handle that. But, yeah, I've heard, you know, many stories from old-time wrestlers. You know, and Brody was around a long time. That used to be a big thing, was guys were using up the crowd because, you know, the fear is that they're going to get tired of cheering all the time.
Right.
And, you know, you're not going to get pop when you hear, oh, you know, this is Bruiser Brody or this is Stan Hansen. You know, they're not going to get the negative or the positive reaction. It's going to be flat.
So it had to be tough then for the preliminary or at least the mid-card wrestlers to do enough to have a decent match, but not do too much so that it would take away from the main event.
Yeah, it was very, very difficult, you know, for these guys, because obviously, you know, like everybody else, you know, you have a finishing move. If you're the guy going over, you want to hit your finishing move. You know, I mean, you're there to get over with the crowd and someday move up the card and, you know, maybe be a main eventer or, you know, semi-main guy and get a little bigger payday. And, you know, that's what it's kind of there. And it, you know, it was kind of the way that you were held down in the business. You know, this is how it was done is, you know, it was difficult to get yourself out of those spots.
Yeah, that's interesting. And another question for you. When there was a state athletic commission, have you ever seen an instance in which the finish didn't occur the way it was supposed to when the referee disqualified somebody and was not part of the finish?
Fortunately, no. I never had to deal with that. Luckily, by the time, you know, I really started wrestling on a much more regular basis, commissions were just ways for the employees to get a little extra payday and the state to just pick up a little extra cash. And to be honest with you, I mean, I didn't even know how much of that, because like in Illinois here, they used to take 10% of your gate. So, you know, if you had a rough night and you drew 100 people, well, you had to give the state, the state gets $100. You're selling tickets for 10 bucks, you get they get $100. Was it even really worth it? And I honestly don't even know how many of those guys turned that money in or if it just went in their pocket. So, yeah, they weren't really what you would call an effective commission then. What they used to do is, you used to have a commission-appointed referee, but all anybody did was you paid the fee and used your own guy.
Was that pretty much how it worked in all the states you wrestled in?
Pretty much. You know, there, Oklahoma was the most difficult one because, like, they had rules like the ring posts had to be a certain height. You know, they had to be between this height and that height, and I know there were a couple shows I worked out there where the guy threatened to shut him down just for like the most minor violations. You know, the ropes weren't taped correctly or, just goofy stuff like that. And it was like, man, this commission is just nuts.
Was that a protection issue? Were they afraid that the wrestlers might get hurt if these things didn't happen or weren't done properly?
Yeah. That was always the thing that they said, you know, well, we're doing this for your safety, but not really. It didn't make that big a difference. I mean, the only way you're going to get injured on a rope is if it's not taped at all. You know, if the tape's coming off the rope, it's no big deal. So, but yeah, it was just, and I mean, I don't even understand the ring post thing. Why has it got to be a certain height?
Yeah. But those ropes are pretty tough, aren't they? I know that with a lot of wrestlers when they start out, especially if they're just wearing trunks, their back gets lacerated pretty badly when they bounce off the ropes until they get used to it.
Yeah, it takes a little bit. You know, it's literally like building a callus up on your back. You know, you have to get used to hitting the ropes, and you know it takes a little while, and you know, just like everything else in the wrestling business, you don't walk in and know how to do it all right away. There's a process of learning how things go.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, wow, look at that. Head on over to TuneIn.com and you can listen to whatever you want.